Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek mobile app or go to SeatGeek.com and enter the promo code LONBA and you'll get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So as we chat on this Friday, the Rockets are in the midst of a second consecutive well-earned off day. They open the season with a fairly brutal back-to-back in California, Golden State on Tuesday night, on ring night for the Warriors, Sacramento on Wednesday night. Fortunately, the Rockets got wins on both ends of that back-to-back. They're now 2-0 heading back home to Houston. Thursday was an off day entirely because the flight didn't get back till very, very early, I think probably about 5 a.m. Houston time after basically having a red-eye flight overnight from Sacramento. They did practice today, Friday, at Toyota Center midday for a couple hours, getting ready for tomorrow night. That's Saturday's home opener against the Dallas Mavericks. I don't know if you can call them the hated Dallas Mavericks anymore, but certainly it's a rivalry game, always fun when they come here. And yeah, as long as they have Dirk Nowitzki and Mark Cuban, and really, as long as it's a Dallas team playing a Houston team, it's certainly a rivalry to at least some extent. So it should be a fun atmosphere at Toyota Center tomorrow night, and I look forward to seeing a few of y'all there and, of course, talking about it here after the game. But as far as today on Friday, not too much news from a basketball standpoint. I will share in just a few moments what we learned from practice, but I'm actually going to lead with something off the court rather than on the court, because in terms of Houston Rockets fandom, I actually think the most relevant news of the day is not so much what we learned at practice, just a run-of-the-mill practice, but it's the documentary that I'm sure you've seen on Twitter, both myself and a lot of other people in the Rockets community, tweeting about this new Chapter 3 documentary of Chris Paul. Really fascinating look at his entire offseason, the process that led him to Houston, and then, of course, the things he's done since joining the team in late June, his workouts with James Harden, his everything from media day to his press conference to buying a new home to Hurricane Harvey, his relief work. Just a great retrospective on everything Chris Paul related, pretty much May through September, I would say. And it started on ESPN last night on TV. That was part one. It's broken up into three 30-minute episodes, and they're actually going to run them all in succession next Tuesday, I believe, on ESPN, the TV channel. But if you are if you have an access to ESPN3.com or the ESPN mobile app, basically if you subscribe to any service that has ESPN, you should have access to that. You just use your cable login, that you can view all three parts of the documentary today. And people keep asking me how to watch. I'll throw out there, you don't even have to be a subscriber yourself. All you have to do is know someone that is a subscriber, and if as long as they give you their password, you can use that at ESPN3.com and then search for Chris Paul, and you'll see part one, part two, part three, and it'll take you a little over an hour in total. Every episode's about 22 minutes because, of course, it's 30 minutes TV time, but that's thrown in commercials for the television version of this. But what it is, it's over an hour worth of programming, behind-the-scenes footage of the process that led Chris Paul to Houston and then everything he's done since then. So it's a really great look as far as behind the scenes of what goes on in these off seasons. A good look at the relationship between Chris and James, too. And yeah, if you haven't viewed it yet, I strongly encourage you to do that. As I said, ESPN3.com. And even if you don't subscribe to a cable service that can get you access because it's going to ask you to enter your cable credentials, then really, if you have parents, friends, all you need is one of them to loan you their ID and password, and you should be able to view it no problem. It's a really good look. But today's episode, I'm going to break down my key takeaways. Again, these are just my takeaways. I strongly encourage you to view it for yourself, and certainly you can draw your own conclusions. But yeah, I was fascinated. I had to talk about it with you guys as soon as I got done. And the biggest thing that stood out to me, I'll start way back in May when the documentary begins. On May 25th, there's a meeting with Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney. That's kind of a mentor for Chris, of course, because he's the CEO of Disney. He's also the CEO of ESPN, more or less. So he's a very influential figure in the media, sports industries, and even bigger than that, there are some people that think that Iger is going to run for president in 2020. But he's a close friend of Chris Paul's, and so he sits down talking about his options. And on May 25th, Chris says to Bob that Houston is probably his leader and that he's been texting James. He describes James as a gym rat. That's another thing I'm going to discuss in a few minutes. But he says he's going to get together with James that night. That's in May. There were no reports of even Houston being on his radar in the middle until the middle of June. If you guys remember on this show, it kind of started around June 14th with a vague reference on a Woj podcast. The LA Times reported it a couple of days later. And then when it really picked up was around, say, June 20th, right before the draft. That's when Pat Beverly had an appearance at a card show here in Houston, a signing in which he basically said he had heard rumors that he would not be in Houston. And so people wondered, how long had this been going on? Answer, very. The LA Times did report later on that they had heard that James was recruiting Chris back into the regular season. They were citing anonymous league executives saying that. And I don't know if it's during the season, but certainly in May, Chris and James were already talking quite a bit. And so that shows you that, yeah, James wanted Chris. It goes back to what we said, that this is not like the Dwight Howard partnership, where in a way it was just, this is the guy that's the best guy on the market, so we're going to go after him. No, with James and Chris, this is personal. They have that relationship. And so all the way back in May, even though the media didn't know what was going on, even though no one really thought it would work, then Chris and James were already behind the scenes pretty far along in terms of sealing the deal that Houston was the place for him. But there are so many interesting conversations. The two that stand out, there's the meeting with Iger, as I said, that's May 25th, and then another meeting in June that Chris Paul had with Jay-Z, another one of his friends. But in the meeting with Iger, he mentions, well, he basically says he has four options. The Clippers, obviously, where he could get the five-year, $200-plus million deal, the Rockets, the Spurs, and the Celtics. The Celtics are interesting because they didn't even really have a clear pathway to minutes. They had Isaiah Thomas, but what I think that shows you is that for Chris Paul, this decision was about winning. He essentially breaks it down that the Clippers were his choice if it were just a matter of only his family, because they're comfortable in LA. Obviously, it's a city that a lot of players like to live in because of off-court activities. But as far as if he were going to leave, San Antonio, Houston, Boston, it was all about winning. So for those worried about, well, Chris Paul is technically going to be a free agent after this year because he opted into his contract, well, folks, his decision was about winning. Even if someone else could theoretically offer more money, then it wasn't about that. He essentially nixed them. There's actually one sit-down in there where Chris asks every team, he looks at these various rosters, and he asks, how many games would we take from the Warriors in a seven-game series? And, of course, they're not going to take unnecessary shots at teams, so we don't know who he's in reference to, but they kind of roll their eyes, and right then and there, it's almost like that team, whoever it was, is a non-option. He's looking at, on paper, a few potential roster compositions there. But, yeah, every decision was made through the prism of how can we best compete with the Warriors. And there's another part where he's talking about the Clippers. He kind of laments some of the culture issues there, and he says, if we're not trying to compete with the Warriors, then what are we doing here? And it really shows you, a lot of players say they're about winning, but for Chris, it totally was. And I think that's part of why Houston is such a good fit for him. Everyone knows how detailed Daryl Morey is in his preparation. Well, then when you have a guy that's as committed to winning as Chris Paul is, and that's kind of a perfect marriage that, you know, you see a front office, a general manager that has that same drive that you do. And there are a few other kind of, I wouldn't call them harsh criticisms of the Clippers. I would call them kind of slight swipes at kind of the Clippers culture. He referenced the lack of off-court activities, some players saying, do I have to go, certain kind of camaraderie, team-building things off the court. And it's just an interesting juxtaposition to the Rockets, because the Rockets have done so many non-basketball-related things. Of course, we know the off-season trips they've taken together, and those are to work out. They do play some ball there, of course. But in addition to that, you see things like last weekend at the Astros ALCS game two, when Chris, James, Trevor Ariza, Tillman Fertitta, new owner, all of those guys are there and having fun off the court. That's something that Chris Paul, notoriously an old-style leader, it's pretty obvious that that would resonate with him, and it's something that didn't really click with the Clippers, but it certainly already is in Houston, it seems like. And so that was a pretty Interesting split, I would say, with regards to his situation in the Clippers and why he ended up choosing the Rockets. He didn't really explain why he didn't choose the other teams. There's one clip about the Spurs in which he says he's heard Popovich could retire in a year or two, and certainly that would change the complexion of things. But it's pretty obvious when you look at this way back in May that Chris and James already had a connection. And then you flash forward a couple weeks later to the Jay-Z meeting. Chris goes out of his way in that meeting to say he wants to play off the ball more, that he doesn't like having all the responsibility. So it's so interesting if you actually listen to what players have to say, because sometimes, especially media members, we tend to think that, well, a player has done this, so this is the way he wants to play. And sometimes it's just situational. And you've had so many folks throwing this ball-dominant narrative with Chris out there, but who has Chris played with the Clippers, or really any team that is capable of shouldering some of that load? So it's not a matter of this is the way Chris wants to play. It's a matter of that's how he had to play because of the roster. And this is before he made the decision. This was before he went to Houston. So it's not like he's trying to rationalize it after the fact. Before he went to Houston, he was already making clear that he was wanting to play off the ball more. So for those asking in the national media, how is this going to work with two ball-dominant players? What Mike D'Antoni has said all along, because they want it to work. And this shows it. It's not a matter of, well, he got traded to Houston, or, you know, James was just the biggest star, so he's trying to rationalize. No, this was something, a clear X's and O's decision that Chris Paul made before the trade to Houston, before he decided on Houston. It was a part of his thought process as he was evaluating teams. So I think that's a pretty clear and very positive sign with regards to how this can ultimately work out with the Rockets here in Houston with Chris Paul this season, and of course the whole X's and O's of how these two are going to fit together. Another interesting thing that came out of the Jay-Z meeting was when he discussed his relationship with Trevor Ariza off the court. So they were already very tight. That had been rumored, but you can tell that Chris has a high degree of comfort with Trevor. Certainly James already did. So for those of you wondering, and well, I was never in favor of it. If you really understand the value of guys like Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon, I don't see why in the world you would think that they should be traded for Carmelo Anthony. But the idea that the Rockets should just trade anyone for Carmelo Anthony just to make Chris Paul happy, that was never a prerequisite for Chris Paul to go to Houston. And in fact, Trevor Ariza is a huge part of why Chris came to Houston. They have a tight bond. And so you can see in the Chris Paul Jay-Z meeting that, yeah, he and Trevor are tight. Trevor is, and as I said, he's the one going out there with them to the Astros playoff games, that sort of thing. There's a pretty tight bond between not just Chris and James, but Chris, James, and Trevor. That had been rumored, but in this, you see it, that there's a very real bond between Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza off the court as friends. And of course, that plays into the comfort and chemistry that they have on the court. So it's been rumored for a while, nothing groundbreaking, but Chris outright confirms that relationship with Trevor in this documentary. Another interesting aspect of it was the Chris Paul-James Harden relationship, because that's discussed a little bit towards the beginning, and then especially in part three when they're getting ready for the season and showing some of the work they've done together. But above all else, what I keep going back to, it's five words from James Harden. It's just genuine. It's real. You can see that those two have a real bond, and it's so fascinating to watch it relative to the narratives that are out there for both of those two players, because some of the narratives, especially when you think about just the clowns, such as the guys on the TNT shows, couldn't be further from the truth about both of those guys. Chris actually describes James as a gym rat on multiple occasions, which of course cuts against some of the narratives out there about Harden being lazy or whatever, which of course, if you really follow the Rockets, you know, could not be any further from the truth. But they enjoy playing basketball together. But the other thing is that there is a deep bond between those two as communicators. They speak about the importance of how they are leading the team. I posted that clip on my Twitter timeline at Ben Dubose this morning. But they discuss at length the hard conversations that they have already had with one another. And James goes out of his way to say they don't have to pretend that they like each other or anything like that. And of course, he's not directly taking a shot at anybody, but it certainly reminds you of a relationship that James had with another alleged star here in Houston that was not this friendly. So with Chris Paul, he's a control freak. So for him to choose Houston, I've said this all along, but you're going to feel much more convinced of that after this documentary, that, yeah, he did his homework on James Harden and the entire Rockets organization, and those two are in lockstep. They see eye to eye. And really, my closing thoughts on all of this is that I was already convinced that there's almost no chance, barring just a catastrophic collapse or something, and I feel less likely in that than ever after seeing the first two games of this season, including a win at Oakland against the Warriors. But after watching this documentary, you can see that Chris is in it for the long term here in Houston. I've always said the one-year contract, the opting in, was just for the sake of keeping the Rockets over the cap, which let them keep their exceptions, get guys like PJ Tucker, like retaining Nene, those sorts of things. But you can see it just a lot of different angles. It talks about how Chris moved not just his wife and his kids, but basically his entire family out to Houston, purchased a lovely new home. I believe they're up in the Woodlands or somewhere in that vicinity. But it's just it was a decision that Chris Paul did not take very lightly at all. This was not experimental. This was about looking at every roster and saying, how many games can I take from the Warriors in a series? What's going to be my best chance? And even if they don't do it this year, the combination of James Harden and Daryl Morey, where is Chris Paul going to get a better chance to win over the next 5 years, which are really the end of his prime in the NBA? I don't see it. For those that are wondering about banana boats and all that kind of thing, it's pretty telling. In May, when he was going through situations, Cleveland was not on there. New York was not on there. Folks, he's got friendships with LeBron, Carmelo, those guys, but he wants to win, and he did not see those as his best opportunity to win. If he did, you better believe he would have considered that. I don't think Boston was particularly interested in Chris Paul. He doesn't really fit their timeline, but he was looking at Boston because it was a chance to win because there's so much talent that's already there. I think it's pretty telling that, again, I don't think that those relationships aren't real. They are, but I don't think he's going to force his way with LeBron, with Carmelo, to any other particular situation because it's cool. No, with Chris, it is a laser-like focus on winning. He wants to take as many games from the Warriors and ultimately beat them in a seven-game series, and it's tough to see any situation other than Houston having the ability to do that, especially because, you know, Houston can keep the entire team and then pay the max, whereas other teams, you'd have to somehow clear enough room to give Chris Paul the max and then build a team as good as this one in Houston with James Harden and the supporting cast of a team that already won 55 this past year. Folks, this is not a decision that Chris Paul made just to go and do it all again in a year. This was about much more than 1 year, and I know what the narratives are out there because people just, I don't know, they have this fixation on James Harden. And they've already convinced themselves, a lot of these national types, that two ball-dominant guys, it can't work. And you have another segment that just loves that banana boat fantasy. So that's never going to fully go away. I get it. But between us as Rockets fans, we can be real. And if you watch this documentary, I think you're going to be more convinced than ever that Chris Paul did not just choose Houston on a whim. It's not just an experiment. It's something that he truly, truly believes in terms of his relationships with guys like James Harden and Trevor Ariza. The front office, it's just a great fit for him, and I don't see anything changing with that over the last 12 months, barring something just extraordinarily unlikely or unforeseen developing over the course of this season. But, as I said, that's just my primary takeaways. I strongly encourage you to watch the entire thing. That's my attempt to contextualize it, but yeah, you can get a lot more depth by actually watching it for yourself. And as I said, ESPN3 has it. All you need is someone's login with a cable subscription that has ESPN, so it shouldn't be too hard to find. Even if you don't have it, just ask around family, friends, and hopefully you can get someone that'll just loan you their password for a few hours, because it'll be a good, about an hour and 10 minutes worth of viewing about the backstory of what led Chris Paul to Houston, and then what he and James plan to do moving forward, and a lot of fun off-the-court stuff, too, as far as some of the relief efforts they've done after Hurricane Harvey and some of the things that Chris Paul has already been doing to kind of get more integrated in the Houston community, because he's one of these guys. He's not just an on-the-court player. He's a guy who off-the-court tries to make a difference as well in whatever community he's at. So it's a really fascinating insight into Chris Paul. Well, certainly the basketball player, but also Chris Paul, the person as well. And I strongly encourage you to do it. Again, it's called Chapter 3, the documentary, and you can view it at ESPN3.com with the appropriate login. Now, we'll be talking in just a few moments about Chris Paul, the basketball player, and when he'll actually be returning to the court in the next few days, hopefully. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at SeatGeek, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. And well, folks, if you want to take in tomorrow night's home opener, or any game for that matter, involving the star-studded Houston Rockets, James Harden, Chris Paul, this great team that's in place, already has a win at Oracle on Reed Night. If you want to take it in, use SeatGeek, because, folks, the secondary market may be the way you have to go. Because buying through the box office, many times it's going to be impossible, and even if it's not, they're going to raise rates so high because demand is very high for a team like this. But you go to the secondary market, many times you can buy directly from the season ticket holders who buy at lower rates, and so that way you're able to get a much more economical deal. And when you go through the secondary ticket sites, to me, SeatGeek is by far the most friendly because, yes, they cross-compare websites so you know you're getting the best deal, but they also grade every ticket from 1 to 100 so you know you're getting the best bang for your buck as well. And above all else, it's very easy. You get you use the mobile app, literally two taps of your finger. You can buy and sell tickets. And then the real perk, you guys, as my listeners here at Locked On Rockets, y'all all get a $20 rebate off of your first purchase, and it's ridiculously easy. Just download the app and go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LONBA on that SeatGeek app. From there, you'll get $20 off your first purchase, and yes, that will also work on SeatGeek.com, and it will even work for non-Rockets events if you want, such as the Astros playoffs, which hopefully lasts more than today. Astros down 3-2 against the Yankees in the ALCS, but back home this weekend, hopefully an opportunity for them to close out that series and advance to Houston's just second World Series in franchise history. But fingers crossed, we'll talk about that more tonight. Now, jumping back into the show, spent the first 15 to 20 minutes talking about the documentary, because to me, that's the real news of the day in Rockets circles, this backstory of Chris Paul, because you can tell a lot about the relationships on the team, and also I think you can get a high degree of confidence about why this is going to work from a chemistry standpoint, and why he's fairly likely to stick around for quite a while, which I've said for a while, but I think you're going to feel very strongly about that if and when you actually get to watch the full Chapter 3 documentary. And, well, it's also more positive. The negative, of course, is the day-to-day, because we learned at practice today, the primary takeaway, well, Chris Paul is not going to play at tomorrow night's home opener against the Dallas Mavericks. And that's because, well, he bumped knees with Mario Chalmers last Wednesday in the second-to-last preseason game in Memphis. He did give it a go against the Warriors in the opener, because I think there was no freaking way that you were ever going to convince a guy like Chris Paul to sit out that matchup on ring night. They wanted to play. You could tell it meant a lot. And to be fair, even though the knee had limited him, he certainly didn't have his usual burst, scored just 4 points on, I believe, 2 of 9 shooting. But he did have 11 assists to just 1 turnover, did have 8 rebounds, did play quality defense on Stephen Curry. So even though he was limited, give him credit, he gutted it out. And, well, he was out there actually at a key 7-0 run early in the fourth quarter that got the Rockets back in the game. So even though he wasn't at his best, he was a very positive contributor for the Rockets. And I don't think they would have won that game without him. So kudos to him for gutting it out. That said, that might be the only game in October that's more than 1 out of 82. When you look at where the Rockets are as a team, especially with a little bit of a weaker schedule, it makes no sense at this time to push the envelope. Because it's clear, again, I'm not overly worried about Chris Paul's knee because it's not structural. I might be worried if we were dealing with something like Pat Beverly had at this time a year ago when he didn't come back until mid-November, because we knew that was a ligament issue. This is not a ligament issue. It's a bruise. That's different. The knee is structurally fine. It's just it's a bruise. However, bruises can linger if you don't give them time to get right. And it's not going to be as simple as just one game off, because, again, it happened last Wednesday in Memphis. When I say last Wednesday, I mean the preseason 9 days ago. And then he pretty much didn't play, sat out the preseason finale, didn't really push it until next Tuesday night in Golden State, really almost Wednesday when you factor in that game started at 10 p.m. Central Time. And with almost a week off, he was still struggling. Mike D'Antoni said after the game that it was like he was walking on one leg. So if he had almost a week off, that's a pretty substantial bruise. That's not one that's going to be able to get cleared up with just missing one game. So it's one of those things. The good news, there's no real long-term concern with it, but the bad news is, if you get away, if you want it to go away, you have got to let it get right, and that might take a few more days than just missing one or two games. So it's a little unfortunate. I would not view him as injury prone. I think that's kind of ridiculous. You see a lot of folks on Twitter because Chris, I wouldn't say he's had a terrible injury history, but he certainly had some saying, oh, he's already hurt, blah, blah, blah. Well, folks, bumping knees can happen to freaking anybody. And when you do it, it's very painful. This is not having weak ligaments or tendons or something like that. No, you bump knees, it freaking hurts. And if you do it on an NBA court moving very fast, it can be very limiting. And actually, I see it as a little more of a positive than anything. Now, certainly it's not going to be without Chris Paul, but I'm not sure if Mike D'Antoni greenlights this a year ago, because we saw various knickknacks to James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon over the season, and those guys did not sit out. They had such a just a grind mentality that those guys generally played through almost everything. And so because of that, I think that played a role in the fatigue issues that showed up eventually in the second round of the playoffs against the Spurs, certainly in the second half of Game 5 and then all of Game 6 of that series. So I actually think it's a good sign that the Rockets, we're seeing clearly one of the two stars of the team, a very important piece, that Mike D'Antoni is taking a longer view rather than trying to force it and just do the typical grind. Because I know a lot of folks in the preseason, and I never thought the preseason complaints about the minutes for the Rockets were really fair, because there are so few preseason games, only 5 total and 1 against a Chinese team. It's really just had 4 games. But you did see some people saying, why are these guys playing 30 minutes or so a game? This is the preseason. Well, first off, it's conditioning. But beyond that, there's just not that many games. So, yeah, there's not that many opportunities to build that conditioning. So I didn't think that that was fair. But certainly in the context of last year, I could see where some folks had concerns that is Mike D'Antoni going to run these guys into the ground again? But when you have a roster that is this good and a team that you should feel secure in being this good, I think last year the Rockets coming off of 41-41, they sort of had a chip on their shoulders all year long. And so that's part of that grinded out mentality, which generally led to a lot of wins. But unfortunately, it caught up with them, I think, in the playoffs from just an overall mileage perspective. I think this year with Chris Paul in addition to James Harden, they are much more secure in being good. And so because of that, you are seeing a much longer view with injuries. Because no doubt, Chris Paul could play tomorrow night. If this game mattered, he could go out there. As I said, he was effective against Golden State, the best team in the league. Chris Paul went out there, 11 assists to 1 turnover, 8 rebounds. He was a very productive player in that game, 33 minutes. He could play, and he could still help you. But the Rockets are taking a longer view. So to me, it's unfortunate in terms of you're not going to have Chris Paul out there, and certainly for the home opener, it'd be fun if he was able to play. But I would not worry about him because, folks, it's a freak injury, and it's not one, but you're dealing with a sprain. You have to wonder, oh, are they hiding something? Is it a grade 2 instead of a grade 1? How is this going to heal? No, bruises heal. It's just a matter of giving it a little bit of time, and it can take a week or two. You just have to wait and see to stay off of it. This is not a structural problem. He's going to be fine. And actually, I feel a little relieved to see the Rockets treating it as aggressively as they are in terms of resting, no matter the situation. And the other part that I think makes them more likely to rest him, I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, but take a look at the Rockets' schedule, guys, and see, try and guess when the next time they're going to be underdogs in the game. They were 9-point underdogs at Golden State on ring night, and of course they won. But then you look at the games upcoming. There are a lot of road games, so I think they probably will drop a couple because it's just that's the way it goes in the NBA, especially playing on the road. But I actually think the next time the Rockets are going to be underdogs is Christmas at Oklahoma City. And it's not a given they will be then. We'll have to wait and see just how good the Thunder are. I don't think seeing the Thunder play the Knicks gives you much of an indicator either way about how those three are going to mesh. Actually, I thought there was a little bit of a warning sign. Even though the Thunder won by 20, that's nice, but seeing Carmelo take 20 shots, he was actually, in a game they won by 20, he was basically either a 0 or plus 1 in the plus minus, clearly the worst amongst the starters. So I think you can certainly see there could be some growing pains there. So it's entirely possible that the Rockets could be favored over Oklahoma City as well, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. If the Thunder play up to their talent level and them playing at home on Christmas, they'll probably be a slight favorite. But other than that, you look at the schedule the next few weeks, home for Dallas on Saturday, home for Memphis on Monday, then at Philadelphia, at Charlotte, at Memphis, Sixers, Knicks, Hawks. This is not murderer's row. Now, a lot of those games are going to be on the road. I believe 7 of the first 10 are away from Toyota Center for the Rockets. So, you know, I'm not saying anything crazy like, oh, they're going to challenge for that 15-0 start to match that 94 team, which is the franchise record for wins to start a season. I'm not saying that. But just from a favorite standpoint, they're in good shape for a while. The next game is even going to be close in terms of the Vegas spread. I think would be Thursday, November 9th against the Cavs, and then Friday, December 15th against the Spurs. Those are two that would be close. But at Toyota Center, I think generally the Rockets are seen as a slightly better talent team than Cleveland and San Antonio. And then you factor in the 3 or 4 points that home teams definitely get or usually get in the NBA, especially home teams in big games for those types of playoff environments. And I think the Rockets are going to be favorites in both of those. But the reason I bring that up, it's not just to, you know, I'm not saying the Rockets are going to go start 15-0 or something crazy like that, because it's the NBA. Even bad teams can get up and bite you, especially on the road, and there are some back-to-backs in there, yada, yada. The reason I bring it up is to say that this is why it also helps them be a little more aggressive in treating Chris Paul and giving him those days off. Because I don't think they see Dallas or Memphis at home as teams that they shouldn't beat, especially with James Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella coming off a 22-17 game, etc., etc. If you were playing a tougher stretch of the schedule, there might be more of a, you know, more of a motivation to get Chris back out there. But you combine it with a little bit of an easy stretch in the schedule and the longer view that was discussed earlier, and I think it's kind of, you never want to have an injury, but as far as timing, it's a weak stretch of the schedule, and it's early in the season. It's about the best you could hope for. And then you combine it the fact that there's no structural issue with the knee. And folks, I know you would like to see Chris Paul out there. I would too. It would be fun. But at the end of the day, I would not lose sleep over this. The exact quote from Mike D'Antoni at practice today, it's only a bump. It's not a tear or something like that. It's a bruise. We just have to make sure he's 100%. And that's the key takeaway. Nothing structural. It's nothing that you're going to have to worry about all year, saying, oh, did it get retorn, something like that. You know, I'll draw a baseball analogy. You look at when Carlos Correa was out 6 weeks for the Astros, torn thumb ligament, he actually partially tore the ligament earlier that month in July on a slide in Atlanta, and then it was already in a compromised state. He tried to play through it, and ultimately, it fully ruptured. He had to have surgery. He was out 6 weeks. There's nothing like that here. It's not like the ligaments are frayed and you're going to have to sweat every time he's out there once he returns that something's going to go wrong. No, it's a bruise, and you just got to give it a certain amount of time off. Everybody's body is different, so we don't know exactly what that is. But once it's 100%, he'll be good to go, and you're not going to have to worry about it, other than from the standpoint that you have to, I guess, worry about a bruise for anybody in the NBA, because you have guys that are playing with this much power, velocity, all that stuff. If they run into each other, it can happen, and it's not a matter of somebody being injury-prone. It's just the nature of the sport. And as I said, just be thankful in the case of Chris Paul that happened very early in the season and in a stretch that's fairly manageable for the Rockets. So there's no there's no urgency to try and force the issue. And beyond that, I think you're also seeing Mike D'Antoni taking a longer-term view than they did last year through these bumps and bruises in which a lot of guys tried to play through it. Because I'm sure if you ask Chris Paul, he'd want to be out there. He's a competitor. You can see that from the documentary. He wants to win. But ultimately, the Rockets have to balance wanting to win every game with wanting to be in the best position for May and June for what they hope is a true push at the Warriors next spring. And with this injury, to me, the injury is a positive, but the way the Rockets are handling it and the timing of it largely is. So if you need a silver lining from it, that to me is it. So I think that's about all we can say on this off day for the Rockets. I don't want to keep you guys too long because I'm sure we've all got a busy weekend. The Astros have at least one game tonight, elimination. That's going to be on FS1. Check it out. Go Astros. And then, of course, Rockets season opener, home season opener, Saturday night against the Dallas Mavericks. So we're going to have a lot going on, and I don't want to keep you guys too long because I'm sure we all have a lot to do to get ready for that. And then, of course, we'll be talking again right here on Locked On Rockets following that game. But for now, as always, I appreciate you guys for listening. And if you're not following me or the show on Twitter already, please do. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. And don't forget, you can always email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, if you want to inquire about becoming a potential sponsor, just as SeatGeek was today. Remember, SeatGeek was today's sponsor. And if you download their app or go to SeatGeek.com and enter the promo code LONBA, you'll get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. That applies to all Rockets. That applies to Astros playoff games. Applies to literally everything. Just use that LONBA promo code. So for now, Houston, I hope you guys have a good weekend. look forward to hopefully seeing a lot of you guys around Toyota Center tomorrow night. And then we'll be back right here at Locked On Rockets following the game to break down Rockets-Mavs third game of the season. For now, happy Friday. Have a good week in Houston, and we'll be talking again very soon.